Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. This is our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music you heard is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, regional art patron Mary Levan, and our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. If you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, please give Walt a call, 219-462-5821. I'd like to thank them for their generous support. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president, radio operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and is part of the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Our program, along with all of our programs, are streaming live at wvlp.org. Art on the Air is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Our shows are carried by Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., and you can hear them at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Our entire show archive can be heard at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. And make sure to like us on our Facebook page, Art on the Air, WVLP. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air and, of course, the WVLP station, we'd be happy to become part of the WVLP family anytime. Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there or at wvlp.org/support. So don't just be a WVLP and Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so, so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air and the whole WVLP family. Join the WVLP family today. And next on our Art on the Air spotlight, we have Dave Casarda. He's the CEO of Duneland YMCA, and he's going to talk to us about an event which they have again called Dancing Like the Stars 2020. Dave, welcome to Art on the Air spotlight.
Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, tell us a little about first the history of and how you're doing this and who's involved with Dancing Like the Stars here in Chesterton.
Absolutely. So before Dancing Like the Stars, it actually started as the Womanless Beauty Pageant. And that predated me, but it sounded like they had a lot of fun. And that program ran its course. And then they started with Dancing Like the Stars. This actually is our eighth year doing the production, and it has grown now. This is our fourth year holding it at Blue Chip. Historically, we've had crowds as high as 600 people in participation or viewing the event, which is a pretty big crowd for a town.
That's an impressive audience.
Very much
yeah,
so.
Yeah, it is. And we highlight local celebrities. So each person who dances receives 20 dance lessons with a local professional, and they choose their theme, they choose the music, and then the night of the event, they perform in front of the crowd. Now, this year, because of the pandemic, we've had to be creative. All of the dances will be recorded. They have one shot at it. So if there's an error, they, just like in real life, they have to keep going. So we will pre-record it. We will have live MCs that will still be at Blue Chip the night of the event. We will feed the dances, and then we'll do interviews and such. The whole production takes about 90 minutes.
Very good. The and it's running on Saturday, November 14th. So the purpose of the Dancing with the Stars is not just to have fun, it's to help out your program. So tell us how that will help out Duneland YMCA.
Yeah, so you're exactly correct. There are two benefits of Dancing Like the Stars. First is education. We take two very small segments, 2 minutes apiece, and which we refer to as mission moments. And we talk about some of the aspects of the why that people, frankly, don't know or don't understand that we are involved in. And then the second portion is raising money. Each year, the Duneland Family YMCA distributes about $200,000 in financial subsidy to families and individuals. And obviously, being a nonprofit organization, we have to go out and raise those dollars. So historically, our annual support campaign, which runs in the spring, raises about $125,000. And then the goal of Dancing Like the Stars is to raise the remaining amount.
So, Dave, are there still sponsorship opportunities still available, like viewing opportunities or hosting a watch party for Dancing Like the Stars?
Yes, there absolutely are. And this year, the sponsorships are going rapidly because we're not limited to the 600 people that are sitting inside a blue chip. Being an online event, we're going to have viewers all over the United States. So this is a really good opportunity to secure marketing. And very honestly, most of our sponsors at this point do it for the marketing opportunities. So I can be reached at the Duneland YMCA if anyone is interested in those opportunities, or as you mentioned, for a link to gain access to the event, to view it on November 14th.
Who are some of your stars that you have dancing?
Sure. So we're really excited about this year's class. We have Jen Brown, who is the marketing director for Cap Trust Lakeside Wealth Management. We have Ernesto Martinez, who is the superintendent at Discovery Charter School. We have Dr. Matt Rachalski from Franciscan Health. We have Garrett Seamus, who is from Davies and Associates Land Surveying, Alyssa White, who is the aquatic and sports director at the Duneland YMCA, and Leslie Woods, who works for Cavalier Distributing and Active Grill in Chesterton.
So they'll actually be doing the performances pre-recorded, but where are they doing that at?
Well, those are in a variety of locations. So I hate to give up any secrets because the locations will match the theme of their dance, and there are several surprises that I am eagerly anticipating. Yeah, I'm excited to see how they pull it off.
So are the lessons still done at Dance Biz?
Yes, the lessons are Dance Biz, and they are great friends of the YMCA. They not only help with this, but Katrina Russin, who is the owner of Dance Biz, also does all the choreography for us for free as a donation for the Y. And they're right on Calumet Avenue in Chesterton. And we couldn't do it without our friends at Dance Biz. They are extremely generous. And, you know, the one aspect of this that many of the dancers don't realize, once they complete this process, many of them then go back to continue dancing. They've really enjoyed it. They bonded with the folks they were dancing with, if that's a spouse or friends, and it turns into something greater than just a one-night event.
Well, Dave, we'd like to thank you for being Art in the Air Spotlight. That's Dave Casarda, from CEO for Duneland YMCA, Dancing Like the Stars on November 14th. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air a regional performing arts company, and their purpose is to address, educate, coordinate, and provide an outlet for the performing arts to the youth of Northwest Indiana. They're founded in 2016. They do productions. I'd like to welcome Caitlin and Benjamin Leonard White. Welcome to Art on the Air.
Hi there, Larry. Thanks for having us.
Glad to have you. Well, what we want to know, and I will start with Caitlin, tell us a little bit about your background. We want to know a little about your personal story, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
So I grew up in Michigan, just south of Detroit, and I got into theater pretty young. When I was 8 years old, I started doing community theater shows. Around that time, some of the parents got together and formed a youth theater program. so that instead of working with adults, we were working with other kids our own age and teenagers, kind of learning from each other that way. And I did that all the way until I graduated high school, moved out here for college, went to VU, got my music ed degree and kind of put theater on the back burner for a long time. And then I started teaching at Wheeler High School, where I, in my interview, they said, well, the old band director was the vocal music director for the musicals. Is that a deal breaker? And I was like, no, that's great. I love theater. It kind of got me kickstarted into enjoying working with theater again. And I realized how much I love the directing side of it as well as being on stage. So about 3 or 4 years later, I was hanging out with some of my friends, most of whom work at Wheeler in various directing positions. And Ben, who just heard me talking about this idea I had for so long of having this youth theater program around here, like the one I grew up in. And that's kind of how we got started. We were sitting at a restaurant and we looked at each other. So are we going to do this? Yeah, we're going to do this. So I guess that's where I came from with all that.
I see you played with Windiana. Did you go on tour to China with him?
I didn't. I think that was when I was back in school for music therapy, so I couldn't afford it, unfortunately.
Just as a side note, my daughter, who graduated also from Valpo with a music degree, she went with Windiana, but she was before she actually went to Valpo. She was just out of high school, but not going to Valpo at the time, and went on the tour with Windiana. She auditioned and got in, so she plays saxophone. So anyway, very good. And what you tell us a little bit about your music therapy thing, what that is now.
So I work out of a home health care agency, and I work with adults and children with intellectual and developmental disabilities, using music kind of as a medium for therapy. And we work on things like communication goals, coping skills, gross motor function, fine motor function, pretty much anything.
Very good. I was going to ask you how you do that and exactly. And that's kind of like your daytime job, correct?
Yes, that's my day job. And then I spend my nights at the theater.
There you go. Well, it's always good to spend the nights in the theater. Benjamin, tell us a little about your journey from how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Yes. So I am from Northeast Ohio, the farthest south part of Northeast Ohio that you can get and still call it Northeast. I did school theater and took several classes in that and broadcasting growing up. And it was always a good skill that I like to develop and perform with. I went from there to do some community theater with my community, because my theater director said, hey, you need to get out there, you need to do this and go play with the adults and the kids from other schools, and so I got to experience just community theater in my little town. And then I came out to VU to get my music ed degree, where I also, like Caitlin, put my theater on the back burner a little bit and got out of school and started teaching elementary music for a little bit, coordinating some after school programs out in New Prairie, and, you know, seeing how the kids were just really enjoying their extracurricular enrichment activities when they were offered to them. And then I moved to Highland, where I teach orchestra. And right about that time is when Caitlin sat down and said, hey, I have this great idea. When I was growing up, we had youth community theater. And it just didn't compute to me, because I said community theater, right, with adults, and you went and got to play with adults, right? And she said, no, we had our own youth theater. And I said, well, that's really cool. So tell me what it looks like and I will help write it up. And so that famous meeting, we sat down and Regional Performing Arts was born and we incorporated as a company. And so I continue my day job of teaching school orchestra and private lessons and managing the theater and the building and everything, and helping out as a now director and music director with the company. And so I've gotten to step into those roles and put my music ed and my theater passions together.
Very good. Before we get off of your personal journey, how did you two meet and get together?
Well, the common thread would be Valparaiso University.
So Ben wanted to take an advanced conducting course, and he didn't have enough people, so he strong-armed me into taking the course. And while we were taking the course, we were also on the executive board of the National Association for Music Education, mm-hmm. the collegiate chapter. So we just kind of spent a lot of time together during that.
We've been working together since day one, I guess.
We have.
And that's good to share the passion together. So tell us about, you told us kind of the germ of the idea of the Regional Performing Arts Company, but tell us about how you brought people together, because I think your board is all volunteer to do that. But tell us, first of all, just about the formation, and then we'll talk a little bit about the mission.
Well, Larry, the easiest way to form things is with chips and salsa. I mean, invite your friends out to dinner, have some chips and salsa, and say, hey, let's do this crazy thing together. and then that gets their attention. But, you know, we have a board of theater professionals, director of theater at Union Township, Jay Hanaway. He said, well, obviously, this is going to be great for my kids. I want to, you know, to jump in and help. And we had dancers and community theater members and all sorts of things that just said, well, this idea makes sense. Let's jump on board.
And since then, it's grown to include some of the parents of our kids that have done shows, and they realized that they liked the program and they wanted to get more involved. So,
and there's an age limit on staying involved with the youth theater concept.
So we do put in a limit of 18 at the age of audition, just to kind of keep that, to keep that on board. But we have had some people who have aged out come back and work with us on the directing side, or even we just...
Summer camp counselors, board projects, all sorts of things. We do like to grow and continue to keep our RPAC family, as we keep calling them, together and as much as we can.
So what's a typical season for you? You know, you've been doing I think your first season was 2017-18. So describe that, and maybe like the venue or venues that you use to perform.
So our fall show in a typical year is usually a larger scale production. So last year we did Matilda. The year before was Once Upon a Mattress. We typically rent a high school auditorium for that. The past few years, we've used Hobart. We've also used Portage in the past. Then the holiday show, we usually do a Christmas show in December.
It's usually a play. And then with our Christmas show, we like to reach out and do a show more in the community. The first couple years, it was at a community church. This past year, in 2019, it was at the Portage Parks Department. So we really like to bring that play out into the community, or that production, so families can enjoy, you know, a good holiday event together. And then we end the year with kind of a mixed bag. I want to say we're on a rotation, but with the current pandemic, I don't know if anything's on any kind of rotation anymore. But we've done plays in the spring. One year I took someone's great idea to do a junior musical and said, no, we're doing the full-fledged Little Mermaid, and it's going to be awesome. And it was very awesome, but it was a very large spring production. And we've done, you know, plays again. And we just like to end out our season with a nice, fun family favorite. This past year was Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. As I said, we've done Little Mermaid, Alice in Wonderland. So something nice and light to end the season with.
Very good. Now, I see you either have or are developing space at the Portage Mall storefront. Tell us a little bit about that development.
So we've been kind of searching for spaces since we started, mostly for rehearsal purposes, because finding rehearsal space to rent is far more difficult than finding performance space to rent. So what this does, we found this building through a contact of Ben's. And it allows us to have, it's a very small performance venue if we want to use it like that. We used it for Lion, Witch, in the Wardrobe, and it worked well. But it also gives us a space to rehearse or have events. We had our member, our kind of end of year party there this year. for the families. And it's kind of versatile because the chairs move. We can set it up any way we want. We have a small stage set up, but it works.
Very good. How many students or kids do you have involved in your program, approximately?
I always like to say there's about 100 over the course of our 3 years. Any show can range from, we just did a teen show with only a quartet of girls, all the way up to, I think Matilda had 42 or 45. And it just depends on the size of the production and what the script calls for. And then, you know, the interest level, obviously, of course, with the name of the production.
And with musicals, who do you use for your pit orchestras?
We contract professional musicians for our pit orchestras, but we try to make sure that the students have the best quality of music to perform to. But we also allow for opportunities for student musicians, especially if we know them or if they come and ask us, a high schooler asks us for more performance opportunities. We'll throw them a book and say, sure, here, come sit in. I typically take keyboard on all of them, because it's difficult sometimes to find another keyboard player.
Yes.
But,
and I mean, it's, as vocal director, usually when we work as a team, Caitlin music and vocal directs. Yeah. And so she takes that pit by the horns. And I mean, if we have horns, sometimes we just have trombones. she heads that up. And then I head up the visual aspect of things and running around and making sure everybody's not
stage managing.
Yes. I mean, that's the subtitle for directing sometimes.
But, well, yeah, directing. Well, actually, when you're at the level you're at, you're a producer, director, and many times scenic designer, lighting designer, and everything. I know, I've worn that hat. I was going to say, for many years at Munster, I used all student musicians. And just in the latter few years, because we had a different band director there, we started putting what I call ringers in there, because we were having trouble getting some of the kids to be in the pit. But we had very good student pits for the most part. And or occasionally I'd bring someone in and everything like that. So that's kind of how you divide your responsibility. Let's talk about COVID-19 and how it's affected you, your program, and, you know, what's the light at the end of the tunnels? Tell us how it's affected your program.
Well, obviously we had to change our season. We had planned a fairly large season this mm-hmm. year, and we were unable to do any of it.
This was going to be the normal season.
Yeah.
After 3 years of building and kind of etching our niche and our following, we said, here are the big productions. We want to add another production. We want to do this. We want to do that. And then March 13th hit and just everything kind of froze. Really?
So we sat down as a board on March 14th and we kind of had all of these contingency plans. Like, this is what's going to happen if quarantine doesn't end by X date. This is what's going to happen.
Did you think about doing any virtual productions? I know that the licensing from the different licensing agencies have been very tolerant of schools and community theaters doing that, or even professional theaters.
We actually did just do two separate virtual performances for our fall shows. One was aimed towards younger kids, 13 and under, called Super Happy Awesome News. That was written to be performed virtually. And then the other was the teen quartet show that was Now Hear This, that all the, I met in person with soloists, I think once, and just individually following all of the suggested guidelines. And then we had them film their own parts and we edited them together. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Tell us about, I think you started a talent competition for the youth called Regions Got Talent. And I think that was supposed to start this year. Did that actually get produced, or did the pandemic shut that down?
So ironically, on March 13th of 2020, yes. We had our first inaugural Regions Got Talent, the day that the national emergency was declared. The first national emergency, I should say. You know, we were kind of out in left field there with guidance and what do we do? And luckily, Wheeler High School still permitted us to have our event. And even at that time, we limited, attendance, and we recommended social distancing and said, okay, you know, this is a 700 person auditorium. Please spread out. We're not going to fill it all the way full, but we really wanted to showcase the talents of 18 and under, the youth of all talents. So I always joke in my I shouldn't say joke in my publicity, but I say from magicians to jugglers. And I really hope that sometime we do get a magician. So that's a shout out. If anyone knows a young magician, not musician, I would love to see that this year. But we have a ton of talented vocalists. And our winner from last year was actually a very young drum player who had a very...
She has drum covers, yeah.
A very nice drum cover that she had all set up. And so, I mean, we got to see different kinds of talent. We had three professional celebrity judges in to evaluate our contestants. And we're looking forward to doing that again this year on that same kind of date around March 12th. Be able to showcase new young talent and obviously celebrate our old finalists and winners as well.
Excellent. I see you guys do something that I did for many years, both at Highland when I was there and at Munster, where you had student-directed shows. And that was a highly sought-after position in both places. Two of my shows every year, the straight plays, the novice show, and the full production was a full student-directed. So tell us about how you approach a student-directed show. What are the requirements maybe to hand off a show to a student and everything?
So we haven't actually been able to produce one yet. This was supposed to be our first year in the spring, so we're not sure if it'll be able to happen this year or not. But basically, we had sent out a call to our students that we had worked with and said, if anyone wants to direct, they were to come up with a show, come up with a production team and who they would like to supervise them so they could choose one of us. We work differently with different kids, you know. And so our student director was all set and ready to go, but we might have to put her on hold until next year. And she knows that. She's very understanding of that. But
just as an observation, would that be something you might consider for some of your alumni after they've aged out of your program, maybe to come back to student direct?
Absolutely. We had one of our alumni assistant direct online, which in the wardrobe this past spring, and he did a phenomenal job.
Now, I want to touch on something. You lost one of your actors at age 14 and developed a memorial fund. Tell us a little bit about that loss and the memorial fund set up in his name.
Yeah, so in May, we did lose Colton Darr, one of our young actors that we had worked with for a couple years, both with Regional Performing Arts and from our relationship at Wheeler with Caitlin doing musicals there. And sadly, we lost him to a pre-existing condition. It is hard. The solution that we really wanted to do as a board was to establish a fund in his name so that students can take advantage of opportunities that he's obviously going to be missing out on. So we've established at the Porter County Community Foundation a named fund in his name, the Colton Darr Memorial Arts Fund. And our goal is to raise $10,000 in that fund that will then pay out each year a scholarship in his name for students that want to participate in our programs, in Limelights, in summer camps with Blue Lake, whatever they might find, and come and say, I really want to do this, but it costs this and I need help. Then we can say, here, go have that experience. This is in the memory of Colton Darr, so go and have a blast, because that's what he would want.
That's what he did.
You're setting that up then, like as an endowment, though. You'd pay that out. Very good.
Yeah, so it's not a college scholarship. It's right. It's all managed through regional as an award, but it's not just for regional programs. We want students to experience, you know, whatever workshops and performing arts opportunities that they find and that their heart wants them to follow.
We got a little bit of time left. Tell us a little bit about if a parent or student is interested in doing your program. What's some sort of the process? Do they audition? Is there fees involved? Tell us a little bit about that process.
So usually about a month to 6 weeks before auditions, we'll put out a call on our Facebook page and on our website and on our Instagram usually. And So students will sign up for a spot to audition, or they can walk in. They don't have to pre-register. It just saves time for them on paperwork. So we don't charge anything at auditions because some also just want to come in and have the experience. And if it's a musical, they can expect to sing a short bit of a song that they've selected and learn a short dance. And sometimes we'll ask them to read. If it's a play, then they'll read from the script with some other students. Our fees that we charge once they do get cast, really just cover the cost of the show, since we don't pay our directors or our board members or anything. Everyone's all volunteer. So it's the cost of the venue or the costumes or the makeup or whatever it is that we need for the show. And so it kind of depends on how many kids are in the show, usually how much the fees are. And there's also a fundraising.
Yes. And I mean, so as the treasurer, the cut and dry, we have a family membership that we ask families to pay once a year. As Caitlin said, the show fees vary. But when we talk about show fees, we've not charged over $25 for a show participant. And even then, those were given with a grain of salt of, if you have need, please let us know. And it, by all means, we work with families who need that help and want to just be participating. Because then that leads me to the last part, which is donations, which we seek out from all of our wonderful community businesses and sponsors that we have. But as we like to say, a board of five and now eight is still very small. And so, you know, 16 hands versus 80 hands, please go ask your pediatrician and your dentist and your doctor, your lawyer, if they would like to support us. And that is how we kind of build our sponsor ties with the community as well, since we have such a well fleshed out RPAC family. Is we're just really asking them to help us, you know, further our mission and put out that good word about what we're doing show wise and support.
Real quickly, give us your Facebook presence, a web presence, how we can get in touch with the Regional Performing Arts Company.
You can find us on Facebook or Instagram just by going to Regional Performing Arts. Our website is also regionalperformingarts.org. That's regionalperformingarts.org. And you can feel free to, if you're so inclined, donate through our website, reach out via Facebook Messenger or email. All of those links are out there, and we'd love to hear from people who are interested and people who want to keep seeing us do these great things that we're excited to do for our students.
Well, it sounds like it's a great program. And of course, I'm made my whole career in theater from the time I was in high school, so all the way through. So I can really appreciate what you guys are doing and doing it with young people. Benjamin Leonard White and Caitlin Leonard White from the Regional Performing Arts Company, thank you for coming on Art on the Air. We really appreciate sharing your story.
Thank you, Larry.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And next on Art in the Air, we have Sue Hahn, who's the Director of Orchestral Studies at the Baldwin Wallace Conservatory of Music. He's on the Board of Directors for Midwest International Band and Orchestra Clinic, contributing editor for Hal Leonard Music, Essential Elements, and so on. He's been a Performing Arts Director at Carmel High School and also at Munster High School for all of our people local in here. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air, Sue Hahn.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Aloha. It's nice to see you.
So,
aloha.
Sue, we'd like to talk, have our audience who do not know you, and of course, we want to hopefully let people that in this area do, talk a little bit about your background, how you got from where you were to where you are, where you grew up, where you went to school. Tell us your story.
Sure. And I just want to say once again how wonderful it is to see you again, Lab. You played such an important role in my early part of my career, and you're a true dear friend. And Esther, what a joy it is to just meet you, and you're a breath of fresh air.
I feel the same about you.
Thank you, Sue. I appreciate that.
So delightful.
Thanks so much for having me. I guess a place to start is just to share with you that our family, we immigrated to this country when I was about 9 years old. And my parents brought my brother and I over here for the American dream. And my parents have an extraordinary story. I'm convinced that if we were to take their story and turn it into a Hollywood film, it would be a tremendous hit. It's just incredible what they have done since they've come to this country. But for me, fulfilling that American dream came through when I started getting involved in music, and through public school, through incredible teachers that I've had in those schools and in lessons. And so when it came time for me to choose a career and go to school, it just became obvious, not only because did I have this passion for music making, and it's something that I couldn't live without, but I also felt this sense of responsibility and this calling to give back all the things that I've benefited from my teachers. And so I decided to attend Indiana University to be a music education major. That was my dream school, and I was so lucky and fortunate to attend that school. And then, not being from Indiana, and I should have mentioned that where our family landed and we lived was in central Pennsylvania, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. It's where the home of the Amish people. you see horse and buggies on a daily basis. So not being from Indiana, I thought I was, after I graduated from Indiana, I was going to go back to Pennsylvania and try to get a teaching job and live out the rest of my career in Pennsylvania or elsewhere. But what I quickly learned was that Indiana is so rich with incredible arts programs in the schools. And I was so lucky that my very first job, I was so fortunate to teach in one of those best communities for music education and arts education in Indiana, which was Munster, Indiana, where I got an opportunity and such an honor to work with Lab as when he was the auditorium director and the theater director, and so many wonderful colleagues. And so, even though I had this desire and this passion and this responsibility for teaching, I had this inside itch that I also wanted to become a professional conductor. And so I thought, I negotiated with myself and I said, okay, you go and you pay your dues and you teach for a few years and then you can go back to school and fulfill your dream of becoming the next great conductors. Well, as cheesy as it is, I fell in love with teaching. And most importantly, I fell in love with the kids that were in my classroom. And so it was 15 years later, after having taught at multiple school districts in Indianapolis and then ultimately in Carmel, Indiana, where I was kind of surveying my life. And, you know, I'm not that old, but I was getting up there and I was like, well, yeah, I have this incredible honor of teaching and providing and helping to fulfill the dreams of my students in my classroom. But there came a time where I started to ask myself, well, Sue, how about your dream? You know, and a part of my dream was to teach and to do what I was doing, but it was also to pursue conducting. So I took a leap of faith and left a tremendous teaching situation and decided to pursue a doctorate degree in orchestral conducting at Michigan State, where I met this extraordinary conductor, Kevin Noe, who I owe so much to. And he and I are still great friends, and I consider him family, really. And so after having graduated there, was so fortunate to start this position here at Baldwin Wallace Conservatory, where I just feel like I'm so many days I'm like the luckiest guy in the entire world to get to do what I do, get to help students and to teach students. And it's the mixture and it's the balance of all the things that I was hoping for. And so what can I say? I just consider
myself so beautiful.
Thank you, Esther.
So, so back to your childhood, actually, what was the music spark that happened? Was there music always playing in the house? Were your parents musical? Did they encourage you to play an instrument? How did all that start?
Yeah, my parents grew up during the aftermath of the Korean War. And aftermath of the Korean War, the entire country was very poor. Most people lived in poverty. And my parents were very, very artistic. And I have a lot of artistic cousins and aunts and uncles, but they never got a chance to study the arts. And my mother, for example, is an incredible singer, is a beautiful singer, but she never got a chance to study the arts either. And because we didn't have a lot of means when we lived in Korea, and then when we first came to this country, I mean, we didn't have anything either. You know, in Korea, we lived in a one-room shack, really. It wasn't like a one bedroom. We literally live in one room where we ate, where we slept, where we studied, it wasn't a one bedroom. It was like a one room situation. And things weren't that much better when we first came to this country. But one day my parents started out, making their living, by going out to flea markets. And even when I was a little kid, I used to go out to the flea markets with them and help them set up their goods and work, their store. We were going to the market and my mother, happened to have been playing on the car radio, Mozart Piano Concerto number 21. And it was this incredible, exotic, beautiful piano concerto. And I didn't know what I was doing back then, but I was just jamming away, waving my arm like I thought I was conducting. And my mother thought that I was getting into this. And she said, "Do you like this music?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, maybe you can play piano. Maybe you can learn to play piano that one day you can play this music." And I said, "Sure, let's do it." And so they didn't even really speak English, but they somehow found a piano teacher, a local piano teacher, Alma West. I believe she's still in Lancaster County, who took me on as a student. We didn't even have a piano. They couldn't afford to have a piano. So we took one of those beginning primer piano books, and then the very back of the book, there's a diagram of a keyboard. Right. So we cut out those two pages of the keyboard. We taped them together, and we put them on the kitchen table. And, you know, and I just practiced putting my fingers in the right places on those keyboard. And that was my first piano. And so I don't know. I just feel like I'm a benefactor of a lot of great luck things that have happened to me. Just the fact that we were listening and jamming away to Mozart 21, you know, when we were going to the flea market.
And the luck that your mother recognized.
Absolutely.
Recognize the desire is, wow, so yeah, absolutely.
Have your parents heard heard some concerts of yours over the time?
Oh, yeah. As you can imagine, you know, they're my biggest fans, you know. Still till this day, I will have a concert and, you know, nowadays I'll send them a YouTube link or whatever. And, you know, I bet you they listened to those tapes about 100 times. I will call them and say, "Well, we're listening to your concert again." I was like, "Mom, you've listened to it for like 200 times. I think you can give it a rest now." So they're incredibly supportive, and I'm so lucky to have them as my parents.
Oh, that's great. So you landed at Baldwin, and you've been there how long?
This is my third year. And like all great places, it feels like I've been here forever, but it's only my third year.
And what exactly do you do at Baldwin Wallace?
As the director of orchestral studies, I'm responsible for all of the activities as it relates to the orchestra. I rehearse the orchestra. And then if we are doing projects, like collaborations with other groups and ensembles in the conservatory, I do that. And then in addition to, I teach beginning conducting classes and then advanced conducting classes. And then the other joy aspect of this job is that I'm also very fortunate to have undergraduate private conducting students. And so I have a small studio of conducting students who start out with me their sophomore year that, you know, they don't know how to move their hands or barely don't know anything. And then by the time that they're a senior, some of them are doing so well. All of them actually are. But it's a joy getting to work with the students on a one-on-one basis. And so I feel like I get a little bit of all the best of the best from all the large ensembles and individual relationships. So I love it.
Now, you've done some arranging there of some of the pieces. And I know there was one we were talking about off air. Tell us a little bit about that, and then maybe we'll take a listen to that. It's the
Arirang.
Arirang, yes. There we go.
Arirang, no problem. Arirang is the most well-known Korean folk tune. I was talking to Esther about it before the show started, and it's like the equivalent of basically the American Amazing Grace. And that tune in Korea and in other parts of the world has been arranged for so many different ensembles, for band and choir and even for orchestras. When I was teaching in the classroom, I wasn't too happy with the arrangements that existed for string ensembles. And so I tried my hand at it when I was actually doing my doctoral studies at Michigan State. And then I shared it with a few of my friends, and they really, really loved it. And they wanted to one school wanted to play it and program it for Midwest. And so that they could play it for Midwest, they needed to get the piece published. And so I reached out to Hal Leonard, who I have a relationship with, and they published it. And arranging is something that I really enjoy doing. And that's something that I would like to do more of, much more of in my future work as a musician and as a conductor. I'm never going to really be a composer, and that's okay. I think composers are just some of the most special people in our profession. But I like arranging music because it gives an opportunity for me to present the music in a really sound pedagogical way for the students that are in my classroom. And so, Arirang was just one of my first attempts at it. I'm not completely happy, but, I've gotten a lot of great feedback about it, and so, which is very kind.
Well, let's take a listen to that. I think this is the Hal Leonard's Corporation String Orchestra publication. This was done in fall of 2019. Let's take a listen to that arrangement there. That was Arirang, and that was with the Hal Leonard, and a great arrangement by Sue Han, our guest today.
So, Sue, what does the sky's the limit mean for you, and how are you materializing that? I mean, I read that you said, now the sky's the limit with the opportunities that I have, and it just made me think, what does that mean?
Boy, I feel like so much of my life is already a fulfillment of that. Really, if you would have told me when I was a little kid, living in Korea or just having just come to this country, that I would have had the privilege and the honor of getting to do the things and being in positions that I'm in now, I would have told you that you're crazy. And so there's still, times that I think back and sometimes I still have to pinch myself really, when I find myself in situations that I'm in. But for the future, sky's the limit.
What do you see for the orchestra, and how are you going to be able to move it to your way, the way you might want to present something? How much flexibility do you have?
Right. So with the Elkhart Symphony Orchestra, you're talking about?
Yes, or with your teaching studies. I mean, it all ties in together, I think. Yeah.
I think the great thing about both situations is that I work with incredible people who are dreamers, who think about collaborating with people and with organizations that we don't typically might not have collaborated with. Here at BW right now, we are in a strategic planning session where we're looking at everything about the curriculum that we're offering. We keep talking about 21st century musician and what that really means. And then with Elkhart Symphony Orchestra, you know, it's such an integral part of the community of Elkhart, and the community is evolving as well, you know. And so on the one hand, well, we want to honor and we want to provide the classical literature and the standard repertoire, but then also kind of dreaming about, you know, who are we not connecting with in our community and what's keeping them from coming to an orchestra concert. I think too often that too many people think or have a misunderstanding about what orchestra and symphony orchestra music is. And they think it's like such a stuffy, you know, activity where people go and, you know, they're afraid, they don't know when to clap or when to applaud and things like that. And I say, oh, that's baloney. Just come. I think Mozart is rock. Like Beethoven music should groove, you know? And I think, heck, if you want to applaud in the middle, go for it. You know, if the music moves you, go for it, you know? And I think we have to tear down these misunderstandings about how people understand or what classical music to be. And so I hope in every situation that I'm in, whether it be in Baldwin Wallace here in Cleveland or in Elkhart, we make the music more accessible and relevant to our audience and to our community. And so in those ways, I want to expand and grow when we're talking about what the sky is the limit.
And we should clarify that you just became the new conductor for the Elkhart Symphony Orchestra. So that's a new gig for you.
Yes, which I'm so honored and thrilled about.
So thrilling, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't, you know, it's somewhat, it's so exciting, but it's, you know, because it's during COVID, all I want to do is just go out there and just meet the musicians and start making music together. But all we've been doing right now is just planning and, you know, planning artistically and planning in terms of safety, which is very important. So there's a lot that goes into it, but underneath it all, I'm so excited and so honored for this new opportunity.
Well, speaking of the COVID, how's that? Well, first of all, I'll talk about how it's impacted you and your teaching there at the university, and then also how you look forward to working with it with the Elkhart Symphony. Are they planning an in-person season? Are they going to do a virtual season? How are those things working out?
Yeah, so first of all, here at BW, it's been really challenging. Our work really began way back in March and April when all this was kind of blowing up, and our school administrators went to work right away and reading and researching about what this disease is and how it spreads. And our school leaders worked really hard to create a safe environment for our school. And so there's a lot of procedures and protocols in place, but I'll focus on the orchestra. So what we do for large ensemble and for orchestra, because it's different for choir and for band, but for orchestra, we have determined that the number of people that we can fit on stage is 15. And so we have put all the students in groups of 15, all of our students who are just string players also for this semester are having to wear a mask. And then in addition to wearing a mask, we keep 9 feet social distance. I think the common the recommendation for string players is 6 feet, but we went an extra step and we said 9 feet. That's why we said 15 people. And in addition to, there's a lot of research and study that says that you shouldn't be around a large number of people for longer than X amount of time. So we determined that to be 30 minutes. So we gather in 15, rehearsing in 30-minute increments before we have to leave the room. And we let the room kind of ventilate, and then we come back into the room and rehearse another 30 minutes. And so it's kind of, it sounds hectic and it sounds really difficult, but I'm so proud and honored to be working with incredible students at BW. I think we're so grateful that even through all this that we get to be with one another and still make music in this kind of way. And so that's how we've been surviving and functioning and making music together at the conservatory. In Elkhart, we're doing the same thing, or we're trying to do the same thing. The very first thing was just to communicate with the musicians and see where they are and what their comfort level is. and engaging in conversation and dialogue with them about what they are comfortable with. And then in addition to kind of re-examining the season, the orchestra had a very exciting and thrilling season planned. We were going to do Mars, and we were going to invite some really exciting soloists and do some really big symphonic repertoire and list. Well, that's not going to happen during the COVID season. So it's back to the drawing board, and we're still in our early stages of planning. But we want to make sure that we have all the important voices included and make sure that everybody in the organization feels safe. And yet, be able to make music together for ourselves and for our community.
And you can always put the trumpets in the back room too, right? You know, put them out in this.
Yeah.
I'm an old trumpet player, right? You know, that's why I say that. I said, you know, piano and pianissimo, that can certainly be for the trumpets, you know, no self-constructed composer to put that in there for trumpets. So go ahead, Esther. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So when you have the students 9 feet apart, how does that sound? I mean, because the orchestra is like, of course, or, you know, you're feeding off each other and the sounds is bouncing off each other. So I'm just curious as to how it sounds to you. I'm sure it sounds beautiful, you know, but.
Yeah, no, Esther, you hit the nail on the head. It's really, really, really hard to be able to listen to one another and be able to play with one another because of social distancing. So it takes a lot of time for us to get used to doing that. And so, and so as we rehearse, that's one of the things that we just have to focus on. So now I dream about when we figure this out and we go back to our normal seating and we can just be closer and hear one another. How much better are we going to be? Because we can hear each other and we don't have to work as so hard, at that one element of performance, but it is really, really challenging, Esther. And you hit the nail on the head, but we've been managing. And so I've been really proud of the work that the students have been doing.
We have just a few moments left. Tell us about a website where our audience can find out about you and also the Elkhart Symphony.
Sure. The Elkhart Symphony Orchestra is elkhartsymphony.com. And my personal website is suhanconductor.com. And I'm also on social media, but I probably use social media for more personal reasons. But those two are the professional websites that I want to tell you about. And of course, the Baldwin-Wallace University is bw.edu.
And we can find you there.
Absolutely.
Well, we really appreciate you. And I'm so happy to reconnect with you, too, after these years of being gone from Munster. That's Sue Hahn, Director of Orchestral Studies at Baldwin-Wallace Conservatory of Music and the new conductor for the Elkhart Symphony Orchestra. Sue Hahn, it's a real pleasure to have you on Art on the Air.
It has been. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The pleasure's been all mine.
You've been listening to Art on the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week. Art on the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show